Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the Commerce Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Zakowitz, and today's discussion, we're going to talk about the importance of symmetrical marketing. The reason we're talking about that is because consumer personalization is top of mind for most retailers now because it's changing. And symmetrical marketing plays a major role into those personalization efforts. So to guide me in the conversation today, I'm joined by Mariel Bocci. She's the Senior CRO Specialist at BVXL. So welcome and thanks for being here, Mariel.
Oh, thanks, Greg. It's nice to be here.
So you drove in from San Diego today. Because your daughter was sick.
Yep.
So how's that going?
Well, she fell asleep eventually. Dad said she was good this morning, so we're happy about that. I saw a picture of her smiling, so everything's good. We're happy now.
That has nothing to do with symmetrical marketing, but we all like kids here. So before we begin, why don't you give the audience a little breakdown about who BVXL is?
Sure. So BVXL is a full service agency. We do everything from migrations to marketing to on-site optimization, beautiful design work, and our sort of claim to fame right now is that we're Shopify's number one largest partner in the world. So Shopify, for people who don't know, is really growing itself within the industry, basically taking a lot of the front-end costs away from some of the mid-level e-commerce companies out there by hosting websites on the Shopify platform.
Outstanding. Thanks so much for that. You were a social anthropology major at Michigan State. Walk me through this. Did you always want to work in the marketing space or MarTech world? And if not, what brought you to it?
Sure. So I thought that I was going to study decision theory and become maybe some sort of doctor, learning about like how people make decisions. I was in college. I had no idea exactly what was going on, but I was really curious about how people interpret the world and make the decisions that they make. So I studied that in college, studied how to research people, which I think is really important to what I do today. And then from there, I actually decided to go to advertising school. So I went to Miami School of Advertising and thought I was going to be a creative director at an ad agency. Turns out I'm only a semi-good designer, which you need to be a really good designer to ever make it to that position. And this idea of conversion rate optimization was pretty new at the time. A friend of mine mentioned it to me and I read about it and I thought, oh my gosh, that's perfect for me. At the time, I was really interested in a company called Future Now, who specializes in persuasion architecture, which is all, you know, decision theory brought into the marketplace. So that was really exciting for me. And I just started going to conferences and trying to network with some people. And here we are today.
So I mentioned that you came in from San Diego today. What is the best thing about living in San Diego?
Oh my gosh, probably the outdoor life. You can basically do any outdoor thing there, which is really nice. You can go to the beach, you can go to the mountains, you can go to the desert. There's always something to enjoy in nature. So that's probably the best thing about it, I'd say.
If you're listening today, you can't see this, but I wrote what I thought your answer would be before you got here, and I had weather tagged. So it was a more drawn out weather answer, which is good. So you can't do those nice things with bad weather. All right, so let's get into symmetrical marketing. Why don't you explain what the heck symmetrical marketing is?
Sure. So symmetrical marketing is making sure that your marketing campaigns align with what you actually serve on your website so that you meet guest expectations. So I think of this in terms of decision theory and psychology as the happiness quotient. So this is a really popular concept in psychology, which is basically creating happiness by subtracting reality from expectations. So if your expectations are greater than your reality, you're probably not going to end up very happy. And if the reverse is true, you probably will be happy. So happiness is sort of relative if you think about it like this. And so you can really leverage this within your marketing campaigns by giving people what they expect or something better.
So what are some of those expectations, right? So let's put it to an actual user or consumer who's maybe on their phone searching for something or getting an email. What do those touch points look like, or what creates that happiness for that individual consumer? Walk me through a theoretical example of that, if you don't mind.
Sure. So one of our clients recently was sending out an email campaign that said that for every shirt that you purchased, they would donate on your behalf $10 to the VA Breast Cancer Center. So it's this whole altruistic email campaign where you feel like if you click onto the site and make a purchase, you're going to be doing something great. And when you click to the site, there was no information about this $10 that you'd be donating. So you weren't sure which shirts to buy. You weren't sure what purchase that you could make to actually satisfy this idea of giving back to charity. So it was really almost created a sense of distrust in the brand because they made a promise and they apparently didn't deliver on it. So even though you may have bought 10 shirts in each one, they may have given $10 to the VA center, but it wasn't confirmed in their on-site experience, so it didn't feel good to the customer.
So we want to make sure different touch points, whether it's getting an email, clicking through, getting to a website, the follow-through, so each different touch point the consumer has is having a consistent message across there. Is that a fair assessment?
You got it, Greg. You got it.
I'm smarter than I look sometimes. There's obviously a lot of channels out there right now, right? We have email, we have web, we have social, which is a staple of everyone's lives. We have all these search ads, things like that. Mm-hmm. Is it every channel they should focus on? Is it select channels? Is it dependent on the type of campaign they're running, whether it's altruistic or here's 40% off a sweater?
Sure, I think it definitely depends on the audience, but I would say more than one. With Bronto, we can use email campaigns, obviously, and maybe your emails have a 40% open rate, which I think is actually pretty good. That would mean that 60% of people aren't seeing the content that you're trying to deliver to them. So you could augment that by sending them similar content, let's say, in their Instagram feed. And that way you could cover a larger portion of the actual audience that you're trying to touch base with.
So what's one of the things, if I look at this and I say, yes, I need to get better at doing symmetrical marketing. I need to, you know, hone my messaging in for that consumer. I know I want to do it. I've got a social or multiple social channels. I've got my email marketing. I've got my web. What's my starting point?
The first thing would be to actually identify what your audience would look like and what they would need from your marketing campaign or your email campaign or what they would respond to. So curating an audience and really understanding who they are would be the first step. I think then you can think about what creative they would respond to. So this is a person who likes a certain NFL team, for instance. You could, and you sell every team on your website, you would think, okay, here are the Raiders fans. Let's send them all Raiders campaigns, and you could have your designer create a Raiders landing page on their site, on your website, and a Raiders email campaign, and Raiders social media campaigns as well.
It's a good analogy because we're in Vegas, right? Yeah. So the Raiders certainly coming over. The Bills would have been a better example, but we'll leave that as it is. So you mentioned landing pages. What makes a good landing page? Is it mirroring maybe what they see in an email? Is it something different? What would you say makes a good landing page?
I think the best landing pages reflect what people see in your marketing campaigns pretty directly. So they copy the actual text that's used. So let's say your email said, buy a Raiders jersey. That landing page could say, here's where you come to buy a Raiders jersey. It's really a simple, simple concept, but we've seen really profound impact by copying the actual, I want to say copy. That sounds horrible though. The actual text that's in your advertisements. You can also duplicate the actual design style. So if you're using a certain color scheme, that works well. Using the same models within your marketing campaigns and your landing pages is great. And if your marketing campaign had a call to action, like buy a Raiders jersey or learn more about what Raiders jerseys we have to offer, the most important thing is to give your guests the opportunity to take that action on your site. So if their intention was to buy, they should be allowed to buy as soon as possible, as soon as they get to your website.
Are you a Raiders fan?
I don't even care about football at all.
Oh, there you go.
I'm from Michigan. I guess I'm a Lions fan.
There you go.
Have you had an experience with clients that experimented with user-generated content or UGC on landing pages where maybe it wasn't used in the email? Because obviously people, they respond better and appreciate other people as opposed to stock models more. Have you had any clients that used UGC in landing pages? And if so, can you speak to maybe performance or lessons learned from that?
Sure. We've had great success with UGC campaigns like that. One of our favorite clients, Movement Watches, actually had a podcast going. They did an off-topic podcast and created a URL specifically for people who heard about them on their podcast and offered a landing page that had the off-topic logo on it. It said off-topic's favorite picks. So it was really relevant to people that like the off-topic podcasts. And we basically did a split test that sent half of guests to the homepage and half of guests to this off-topic landing page. And it converted 20% better,
oh, wow.
Right? 20% was a lot of dollar bills for the client. So we were really happy about that.
Very cool. Where do you sit on landing pages? I'm sure this is going to vary as well. Like, there's always two sides to every coin, mm-hmm. unless it's one of those fake coins. I guess it's still two sides, just two heads. Is there a challenge with having a landing page because you've increased friction, right? It's another touch point to get where I was wanting to go as opposed to just taking me where I wanted to go. And where do you stand on friction versus benefit in terms of landing pages?
Yeah, so I'm definitely an anti-friction person. We have a lot of people who are really excited about building their brand story through content. So a lot of times they'll do content driven campaigns on Instagram, for example, where they want to show a lot of beautiful pictures. They spend a lot of money on photography, all these kind of things, and they want to create a landing page that really shows all those things off. But what we find through things like heat mapping is that people only scroll a little bit down those pages sometimes, and they never even consume all the content. And maybe what they really wanted, the people that do make it to the bottom of the page, are clicking on a call to action to maybe make a purchase or something. So the more and more data that I see is, I think that you should give people the option to move forward if they want, because if they want to read the content, they will. They're not stupid. They're not just gonna leave because you told them they could.
We see across the industry that obviously smartphones are dominating from really the go-to internet technology now, but we still see the majority of conversions happening on bigger screens, so laptops. So we get higher traffic on mobile, higher engagement on mobile, but the conversions are happening on the laptop side. How does the predominant mobile experience challenge your approach to symmetrical marketing?
That is a very hard question because unfortunately, we can't curate these audiences across device, right? Sometimes you can with your Facebook audiences, for instance. Well, you'll know a Facebook visitor, whether they're on mobile or on desktop, because they're signed in. So you can create a symmetrical experience for them, but across channels, it can be very difficult, which is one of the reasons I think you need to try and reach people through maybe a couple different channels to make sure that you're saturating your audiences to some degree. But I do think that's a challenge now, and I know that there's some tools popping up in the market that can help you with that, which I would highly recommend using if that's really important to your marketing strategy.
The second part to that situation is when you're designing landing pages, do you design them with a mobile first approach, or do you design them with a, like say a laptop or desktop first approach that also renders well on mobile? What's your stance on, you know, how you tackle those obstacles?
Definitely mobile first approach, though I hear mobile first a lot, and that's something that we use at our agency, but I almost think like mobile separate. For me, people on a mobile device might not be on your mobile device to convert the same way they do on desktop. So they might be out and about looking for a store. They might be trying to contact you. There's different conversions besides sales that people do on mobile that I think are really important to consider and may not translate to desktop or may not need to. So just the way that people interact and what's important to them might be different on a mobile device than on a desktop device.
Is there anything marketers need to think about with regard to social platforms when planning these symmetrical campaigns? Are there better social networks? Is it pretty much best practice for Instagram and Facebook to have the same approach to it? Obviously, they both have pictures, but one is predominantly pictures. The other one, you can put text with it. You can have different ads, things like that. What's the best approach or best practices around thinking about social?
Yeah, so I think one thing that's really nice that BVA is trying to get a lot of our clients to do, again, we're Shopify, we're not huge brands, we're medium-sized brands a lot of the time, is to get influencers to actually create audiences for them. So what you're saying is like maybe on Facebook, certain kind of people respond, maybe on Instagram, how do you decide what to use and with whom? So if you sort of take out this top-down approach and instead start with your influencers and let them speak to their audiences how they always do. For instance, we work with Grenco Science, and one of their influencers is Snoop Dogg. So Snoop Dogg has his channels he always uses, and his followers follow him on those channels. So once those audiences are identified through his promotions, you can speak to those customers in those channels.
So let's talk about influencers for a minute, right? Because this is a topic that I think more and more retailers and brands are starting to do more often, right? They're seeing value on it here. Do you see, just from working with clients, more and more companies are actually moving to the influencer side? And if so, how do you find, and you may not know this, and feel free to just say, I don't know, but how do you find them to identify the right influencer? Do you guys help with that at all? Do you, it just in general conversation with these clients, do they say, hey, you know, we found it on hireaninfluencer.com or whatever? How do retailers start finding this? And do you see a larger shift in moving to the influencer model?
Sure. I think there's a lot of different ways to do it. At BV Excel, we use a tool called Impact Radius, which is a combination of a place where influencers go to find brands they want to work with, and also a tool to use if you want to speak to a specific person. You can easily set up sort of a payment gateway with them, even if they're not already on the platform. So that's sort of what we use, though there's a million ways to do it.
You're definitely seeing more and more brands shifting into an influencer type approach for marketing.
Oh, definitely. I think this is like the celebrity advertisement of the future. So if, you know, you could get Beyonce to wear your t-shirt, like now this is the Beyonce of social media. There's people that make a name for themselves that maybe aren't movie stars, but they're internet stars. So they can really make an impact on how people perceive your brand.
So if anyone listening wants me to be an influencer for them, I have at least 900 Twitter followers. I can reach, and one of those is my wife. So I can certainly influence a lot of people. Feel free to reach out to me. Is there ever a time where symmetrical marketing doesn't really make sense for someone to do?
I don't think so.
There you go.
I think it's always good to give people what they expect or something better.
All right. How do you see consumer personalization changing over the next 5 years?
Oh, that's going to be great, I think. Personalization now is evolving so fast. What I'm hoping to see is more interactive experiences. I think that online now you can get certain products served to you, or maybe see your name on a website or get an email series tailored to you. But I think that as things progress, people will be able to gamify the personalization a little bit more so that you have more fun with the brands. And instead of going to the mall, you have online shopping and you're going into stores because you like how the store feels, right? And it's for you in a different sort of almost tactile way than it is currently.
What is the number one thing you want people to take away when you talk about symmetrical marketing? What's that golden goose?
I think the happiness quotient for me is the most important. Give people what they expect or something better. I think that if you align your audience, your acquisition, and then sort of your acknowledgement of what you promised them, you can do that really easily.
Very cool. Last question has nothing to do with symmetrical marketing. Maybe it's not the last question. So we talked about how you see consumer behavior changing in 5 years. It's probably in your wheelhouse because social anthropology major, right? So where we're at now from a consumer behavior standpoint, did you, when you were in school or immediately after school, did you see the change and predict where we would be at now? Or are we further along than you might have ever imagined?
I think that I did not see it, though I don't think I was thinking about it. That's always the problem with forecasting the future, is like, what is it you're trying to forecast? You know, what is the question or what is the hypothesis that you want to make? I mean, I knew things that would be a lot different, but I just didn't know how. And I think it's really exciting the time that we're in because we're kind of at the beginning of it, right? Now they have 3D and like interactive experiences and all this kind of stuff. We're still on the precipice of something. And I think we think we're in it, but we're not.
Yeah, I had a conversation with someone just a short while ago and we were talking about the evolution of voice search. And I said, it's a thing. It's here.
Yeah.
Right. And I never would have thought that a browserless type commerce or browserless type interactions would actually be a thing. I don't know where we're going. I have one more question for you.
Okay.
This has nothing to do with anything we've talked about today. So game show type question. I'm going to set a timer for you.
Uh-oh.
15 seconds or less. Well, 15 seconds. I'm going to give you the full amount of time. Name as many fish as you can in 15 seconds. Okay. Go.
Blowfish, Nemo, goldfish, koi, starfish, swordfish, oh my gosh, this is hard.
Time's up.
Oh my gosh, already? Did I even say blowfish?
I don't think so.
Oh God.
I'll have to go back and consult the recording. I think you said goldfish twice, but I just jotted down and gave you credit for it. So you've got six.
I didn't sleep a lot this morning.
I like Nemo though. That was a very nice choice.
I know. Now I can think of like 100 now that the time pressure's off.
Go.
I didn't even say like bass or trout or any lake fish. I didn't even say anything. That was fun though.
There you go. Mary Albachi, senior CRO specialist at BV Excel. Thank you very much for your time today. I really enjoyed having you. You're a great person to talk to. Do you have any closing remarks? Anything maybe I neglected to ask you that you think is really important to this conversation today?
Yeah, I think that with anything, audience first, think about the needs of your audience. And if you can listen to your audience and deliver on what they want, I think that your campaigns will be symmetrical just naturally and they'll be well converting.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much for your time. And thanks everyone listening for joining for another episode of the Commerce Marketer Podcast. Look forward to talking to you next time.
That was fun.